Now, we started the year, we started 2025 telling you that we like cricket again. And after the first month, I can tell you with confidence that our stance is still the same. Mm-hmm. So last week, I went to go watch my Cape Town game at Newlands. And so many amazing and fond memories about the game and everything about watching it sort of flooding back to me. Now, I grew up in Cape Town, so Newlands was like my first love when it came to cricket grounds. As a kid, I used to go there, and it was a good old school love for sport, right? I'd play in the car park, wherever there was like open space with other kids. I'd be getting signatures on the boundary with all the other guys, watching white ball cricket in its infancy. It really was just a very special part of my life, and it was the biggest thing in my life before, of course, golf, booze, rugby, you know, watching the Boca, all of those things came into it. Now, of course, cricket itself, you know, hasn't done itself some favors over the years, both locally and internationally. I mean, it's kind of sold its soul to the highest bidder. The various formats have cannibalized themselves. Danny Morrison, I mean, the list could go on. But I don't want this show to be about that, because I just think there's so many great things about cricket right now. And I want the show to be just about that, what we can enjoy about the game and what we can look forward to about it in general. Of course, for such an incredibly long intro and huge topic, the guest has to also be a superb one. And I think we got just the right sort of guy. A child prodigy with the bat, he stormed into the S under-19 team. And at the Under-19 Cricket World Cup in 2010, he was the player of the tournament. He was averaging near like 100.
Yep.
Clearly knew what he was doing. Since then, he's become an absolute stalwart of the DP World Lions franchise. He's the current captain. And he's entering his, I think, 14th season as a top order batsman there. It is Dominic Hendricks. Tom, how's it?
I'm well. Thanks for that lovely introduction.
I'm also quite impressed by it. Hey, no auto cue, nailing this.
That was really good.
First time. Let's go, guys.
Thanks. I'm actually basking. You know why? It's because Marv's watching today. Marv, who's the big head honcho here, he's sitting. He's laser focused on me. Marv's also a big cricket fan,
right?
And of course, that's why he wants to be here. I think he's gonna start heckling us just now. Dom, thanks so much for joining us. I interviewed you like 10 years ago.
That's correct.
It's a long time ago. You haven't changed much. A little bit extra facial hair.
A little bit more.
A lot more cherries on the bat, to use a cricketing term.
Yeah, a bit of a tighter back over the years. Yeah. That's about it.
Okay, Sandile, so obviously we're going hard in the cricket. I love the fact that you've worn your photocopier salesman shirt again.
I knew you were not going to let me get away with it.
No, it's actually a beautiful shirt. And in honor of Dom, you're actually wearing the four-day shirt.
That's exactly what I did. Yeah. I did my research, so shout out to me.
It's a huge step. I'm really appreciative. We need to get into your usual intro stuff. We need to talk about last week's poll. Last week we had a poll, and it was a rugby poll. Who is SA's best chance of winning the URC? No surprises there. Zero votes for the Lions or the Stormers. The Bulls, they look to be the number one at 67%. And the Sharks, who had a good win last week, they look to be the 33% of your votes. Look, it is between those two. I hope they both go quite deep. I really do. But we need to get into recapping last week. It was another fantastic week.
Yeah.
It's been a good time for football in general.
Yeah.
As I said, the SA20 has been really, really great.
Yeah.
There's been quite a lot of rugby and, of course, the tennis. So for our clip trip, that's gold moments of the week. I have five nominations, which we can discuss loosely. And, Dom, you can decide which one it was. We have to start with the tennis.
Yeah.
Madison Keys beating Aryna Sabalenka.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
Didn't. I thought, you know, we spoke about it last week. We thought Sabalenka was going to be dominant again. But once again, women's tennis being super unpredictable. So, yeah, that was great.
And then my guy, who is the true
heir
to the throne of the Novak, is Jannik Sinner. Now, I know whenever I talk about Jannik Sinner, this guy over here straight away goes into the juice. He goes into the water allegations. Let's just bypass that for a second. We'll talk about that again in April. But he is a cut above, right, Jannik Sinner?
100%.
Steamrolled Zverev.
It was terrible for a final for him to steamroll it. I was like, give us a final. But it shows how dominant he was. Jackson was, he was awesome. It was a quick final, but he was just absolutely clinical, and you know how we stay using that word. So yeah, he was amazing.
He was something that was amazing, of course, over the last few weeks, but culminating this weekend is the Pearl Royals have been the first SA20 team to go unbeaten at home.
They've been 7 of 8, absolutely dominant, and it feels like from top to bottom they are balanced, and that's what clearly this format of the game is going to be, you know, the difference maker. So they've been great.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that that youngster with the hyphenated Afrikaans name, Luhandre...
the one that I asked you about the pronunciation. One day I'm going to just send you the voice notes I sent to Ben about the Afrikaans names that I have to try and pronounce.
No, guys, I got to say, the prep in the show is thorough. Huh?
Anyway. Luhandre Pretorius, I got it right.
Yeah. Look, it all depends on how much of H you throw in there, but credit to that, okay? You look, I mean, well, we'll get into it with Dom when we talk SA20, but to be that young and so fearless, especially when Joe Wood goes out first ball, he's like, don't worry, Joe, got this.
Got this, yeah.
Okay, so that was another massive That's Gold moment from the weekend. The last two I want to bring up here is Kansas City Chiefs, another Super Bowl final.
You know,
tight game against the Buffalo Bills, but they got it done.
Look, everybody thinks there's an agenda for Patrick Mahomes to get into another final, Super Bowl final, and, you know, that team just plays well, and they're built for the big moment. But I am hoping that the Eagles break this, you know, this dominance of the Chiefs. So we've got an amazing Super Bowl final, Chiefs versus the Philadelphia Eagles. It's going to be, you know, a whole bunch of action in that. So it was awesome to see Mahomes go again three-peat into another final. So that was good.
I don't mind greatness if it's warranted. It's fine. And the final option for the Clip Drift That's Gold moment of the week was Bournemouth. Bournemouth 5-0 against Nottingham Forest.
I'm telling you guys, Forest is a fluke. It's not always going to be like this.
They've got a net aggregate win over Liverpool this year in two games. They are still in third position on the log.
Yeah, 5-5 was quite humbling, but you know, I was shocked at how dominant Bournemouth were. Shout out to Bournemouth. I'm not gonna go deep on a hate on that.
All right, so what's it gonna be, Dom? Out of those five, of course, no Man United in the That's Gold moment this week. Dom's another Man United fan.
Yeah, shout out to Dom, yo.
I keep bringing them in, like unbeknownst to me, like there's another Man United
shout
fan.
Shout out to Dom.
Dom, what was your highlight from last week out of those?
Well, I couldn't put it past. Well, the two for me that stand out are, and the two that I've been following mostly has been the SA20 and the Premier League. So hard to choose between. Obviously, the Paul Royals going unbeaten and Bournemouth drubbing Nottingham Forest. So I would actually have to say Bournemouth.
I agree. Good on them, hey, because it's all going to come crashing down this week in the play Liverpool at home, or will it? We'll get to that in the final section of the show. Of course, that is our massive preview section for the part of the show. So when we come back after a little break, we're going to talk big time cricket. We've got some really cool topics. And like I said, Dom has been a professional. This is 14th season?
Yeah, that's right.
Fucking nailing the prep this week. 14th season. So he has seen a lot about the game. And of course, he's also a qualified coach as well. He's toured England. He's played in England. Mm. So he knows about overseas cricket. We get his insights around the World Test Championship. Well, of course, we played at Lords. And he's been very involved coming into the SA20 as well. Dom, thanks for joining us. We look forward to chatting to you right after the break. Welcome back. Big episode of cricket this week for episode 33. And with that, we have our guest, Dominic Hendricks. So, Dom, last year, you guys at the Lions, the DP World Lions, won the four-day tournament. Mm. So, defending champs going into that one, big deal. You're currently top of the log. Now, this whole four-day series is quite confusing because you guys are forced into a bit of a break with this SA20.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so here we are. We see the top of the
log. Well, our season has just been forced into a bit of a break. So, yeah, pretty much only Division 2 are currently playing cricket. Division 1 all halted at the moment.
Okay, so just before we get into like some general talking points, I just want to run through like you as a professional right now.
Yeah.
Four-day cricket must be quite hardcore, right? Because you're playing, as the name suggests, 4 days. Mm-hmm. So it's not like these matches are quick turnarounds and you get a lot in. Your season's quite difficult. But now, it's not like you can then practice less or you have on hold. Because even now, you're practicing, right? Like,
that's right,
what's the schedule kind of look like for you?
Well, it's been a funny one. This year has been, it's come with its own challenges. I mean, we started in September with T20 cricket. We then went into the four-day competition that ran... Well, we basically had a run of 4 games in a row, so we played the whole of November until the 1st of December, if I'm not mistaken. And then I've pretty much been off. Our next game is only on the 15th of February with the Wonder Cup starting. So literally, barring 2 weeks ago, I hadn't touched the cricket bat in about 5 or 6 weeks. And then giving myself about another 4 to 5 weeks running into the next competition, we sort of started training again. So it's been thick and fast in the last sort of week and a bit because of the SA20 we've had... a couple of logistical challenges with JSK training. So we've had to shuffle around when and when they have and have not been available. So, I mean, yesterday I trained in the morning. This afternoon I'm training again and tomorrow morning again. So it's just loosely based around whenever the facilities are available more than anything.
So Sorry, Ben, just continue. No, no, you carry on.
You
talk about the break in terms of your training, in terms of a team. How do you keep up, you know, as an individual in terms of making sure that you're abreast on what's going on in terms of your individual training? What does that look like?
Well, yeah, everybody's sort of in their own space, or in their own or different points of their career. So I've obviously played long enough, so it doesn't take me as long to get into it as it used to in the past. Yeah. So I'm a bit blessed that it takes me a little bit shorter to get going as opposed to the younger guys. Mm. I know some of the younger guys have started batting like the first week of Jan already, but it does make sense. I don't need as much time. So yeah, just checking in. There's a couple of like cricketing drills, if you could say, that just get me going for the first couple of days, and then can pretty much go full on into it straight after that.
Okay. So obviously, like with the conditioning of the various things, like you mentioned there, you got a one-day tournament. There'll be a T20 tournament, whatever it is. I know when you were in England, England are very well known for that because their summer is only like 4 days. You know, it's a tight window. Yeah. When the guys are in town, it's like a traveling circus. You can play a four-day game into a T20. The formats will change. But I mean, like conditioning-wise, is cricket just cricket? Or, okay, for example, you're a batsman, okay? And now people make a big deal about the fact that there's test match batting, there's red ball batting, and then there's T20 explosive batting. But preparation-wise, batting's batting, right?
The foundation's still the same. I mean, you've still got to hit the ball. The only difference is really mindset between the three formats. So in four-day cricket, you've got a bit more time, and the conditions are forever changing and forever evolving. So on the first day, it could be green and seeming, and on the last day, it could be low and slow and turning sideways. So that's the biggest shift. It's just more on the mental side, how to sort of deal with any challenges that arise on the go. And then the white ball formats are pretty much you play on better wickets and you're trying to score more runs at a quicker rate between the two formats. So it's just that mental shift more than anything. And yeah, like in England, I've spoken to a lot of guys that have played like county cricket, like Vian Mulder, and they sort of say you play so much that you actually don't have time to train. So if you get into a good space, you just run with it and you basically ride the wave, essentially. And if you're in a bad space, you also don't have a lot of time to train. So you sort of find a way to get out of quite quickly because you're playing basically every other day. I know in a month they maybe get like 3 or 4 days off sometimes in the county season. So it can be very, very challenging in that aspect. It's just dependent on, if I could say, what mental state you're in more than anything. When the games do come thick and fast, because mental fatigue is quite a thing if you play a lot of cricket in a short space of time. I mean, after those 4 weeks that I played in November, I was like, cheapest. That was a hectic 4 weeks, even though not every game went the full 4 days, but like the fatigue of your brain, and then just obviously being on the field, because we won three of the games, we just spent a lot of the time in the field. So just making sure that when the next game starts, you just make sure that you're 100% mentally ready more than actually physically prepared, because you're never going to be 100%
sure,
in the physical space.
But especially in cricket, where it's like it's a team sport, but it's basically an individual thing, because you get that one chance, doesn't go well, you get a duck or you drop a catch or whatever. Mm. Other sports, you can just play better the next time the ball comes near you or whatever. But for you, it's just on.
It has to be on. I wanted to ask you, just also jumping onto what Ben said, is the need for specialist batsmen still such a thing? Because, you know, in the past, there was always you're a test match expert or you're a one day or T20. Do you now have to be a consistent hybrid between the three formats as a batsman now?
I would have to say so. I've been fortunate that I've played for long enough, so I've had the opportunity to learn as much as I can, sort of how to do it. But I think a prime example of that was David Warner. I mean, he started playing T20 cricket and burst onto the scene on the T20 scene. And then next thing you know, after a good season, he was playing test match cricket, opening the batting and pretty much batting just as aggressively as he did. And over time, he sort of found his way of doing it. So there definitely is a lot of, I would say, hybrid batters these days. But there is still, a space for traditional four-day or test match players, because the game, as much as there's this baseball and T20 cricket sort of taken over the world, there is a need for people to bat like the Pujara kind of innings when the time comes. Because, I mean, if we go to Lords during that World Test Championship, I've got no doubt it's going to possibly do it, but I mean, weather dependent, but there's a fair chance that conditions could be quite tricky, and if you go hyper aggressive, you could be 60-for-7 in a session, and you could be on the back foot. And
So I'm glad you bring that up. We're going to jump around a few topics here with you, but the World Test Championship, now everything you just mentioned there, it's great if you've got a rhythm and you know where you're going. Now our guys, let's just say our top guys are Marky Oaks that we know are going to be playing World Test Final, that have been going to play SA20, going to be picked for the IPL games,
yeah,
are playing Champions Trophy. Their format's all over the place. It's particularly the bowlers here, okay? Now, you go from 3-4 over stints, suddenly you got to put a proper shift in where you're bowling maybe 15 overs a day. Mm. I mean, we see a lot of injuries now with our fast bowlers in particular. Some of them do have just, you know, back issues. I know. I'm a guy with a dodgy spine. Mm. Like Unrich Nokia, there's been an ongoing kind of thing with him. The stress and strain you put through yourself when you do that is incredible. But now, we speak around all kinds of sports about workload and how hectic it is to get longevity and the best out of them. Is there something to say that, okay, cool, play the T20, you're in demand, you do those kind of things, but the guys have to play an element of red ball cricket throughout the game just for their own longevity and conditioning?
I would say so. I think the biggest issue, obviously, is the shorter format. You're only bowling four overs, but you're playing like pretty much every second day. So, yeah, as an example, I know JSK this week, they are playing four games in the space of like 6 or 8 days. So it's a hell of a lot of cricket. Mm. People don't think it's very taxing on your body, but with all the traveling that's involved in between, there's a lot of sitting involved. So you're not really very, very active. It does tend to play, or it can play a taxing element on your body. But like you're saying, going into the World Test Championship, there's going to have to be a lot of workload and overs in terms of getting ready for that. And I've got no doubt the SNCs, so the trainers and those kind of guys, will have some sort of formula on how to do that. The unfortunate thing is there's not a lot of Red Bull cricket building up to June. Obviously, that's our winter. Yep. So if guys are not playing overseas, like in the UK, they would probably have only, I think, two tour games, possibly one tour game before going into it full swing. So it does come with its challenges. The international schedule and the cricketing calendar as a whole at the moment is a bit all over the place. I mean, T20 cricket, like the IPL, is taking 2 months of the calendar almost every year at the moment. So it's very, very difficult to manage these workloads. But that's why cricket and Cricket South Africa, I would think, have hired the best people to do those kind of things, so that injuries can remain low and, yeah, people can sort of, or fast bowlers can be able to put in their shifts when the time comes and bowl 20 overs, 20 plus overs in a day.
But do you reckon that, okay, so the World Test Final is going to be at Lord's. As we know, they use a different ball, right? They use the Duke ball.
That's correct, yes.
Here we use
Kookaburra.
Still the Kookaburra.
Yeah.
As in the Aussies, same deal.
Yes, that's right.
So now we're going to go to the World Test Championship. And as much as it's simple to say, just another game, we don't really want it to be a T20 game in different clothing. We want it to be a full-on test match. Now, is this something that the guys, do you feel, can adapt with the conditions enough in one test or one game? Or is it something that they do need two or three games to really feel set? Because so often we see touring teams come here, first test, we play them in a green top somewhere, and they look underdone. Mm. And then by test two or three, which is the end of the test series always, they're, it's alive. Like, this would have been a great test series. But do you think that we have a chance to be of a good enough level and not look underdone for that?
I think we should be okay. I mean, a lot of our players will be playing cricket in some form or the other somewhere around the world. So if you look at our top order, a couple of those guys will be in the IPL. If they're not in the IPL, a few of those guys will be playing. I've got no doubt a lot of our batters will be playing county cricket.
Okay.
And then the same thing goes with our bowlers. I mean, they'll come straight from Champions Trophy, IPL, and then a little bit of a layoff, probably a couple of weeks after the IPL, and then straight into a couple of weeks of training camps. I know that's a big thing at the moment, where it's like a week or 2 weeks bowling into a series where training camps happen, to get those sort of workloads up. In an ideal world, going back to your original question, in an ideal world, you'd like it to be a bit more cricket played, because
well, it's like specific cricket, I think, where I'm going with this.
Specific,
like,
cricket. So yeah, you'd want maybe two games, and then the third game being the World Test Championship, so that you know guys are 100% ready. Unfortunately, because of the nature of the schedule at the moment, that's, you can't really control that as a player. So you've just got to be as ready as you can with, if I could say, the limited resources that are available in terms of training and preparation. I mean, you can't really use that as an excuse to say, listen, I would have been ready if you give me a week. You've just got to say, you know what,
gotta jump
it is what it is, and I've got to try and do my best, whatever the conditions are thrown in front of me. And like you're saying, with a completely different ball that, yeah, I'm sure not many have played against.
What's your favorite format? If you could play just one format,
what is it? Ben, you couldn't hold it. We've got a split decision.
Really?
No, no, we don't. He thinks Test match cricket's done. I just want to.
I think this is the most exciting time for Test match cricket right now. This final, everything else, you know, and we're gonna get into it when we talk about, you know, the road to the final. Is I'm a T20 guy because of the excitement and everything around it. Mm-hmm. You've clearly seen that there's been a big push for cricket to be a more exciting, more marketable sport. I'm not trying to push you to the right direction, but. What is
it? Not only are you hijacking my question, you're now manipulating his answer. You're doing really well here.
Just leading the witness. Go for it. Sorry, Dom.
So my favorite format's 50 over cricket. So I've
you see that's the real purest format for me.
Oh, what?
It's sort of a hybrid of both formats. So there is a need for someone to knuckle down and sort of get on with it at a point. And there's a need for someone to sort of play shots. So I'd say especially when you're sort of batting in the top to middle order, your role is forever adapting. I mean, no game is ever going to be exactly the same, where you're going to be challenged with different things and different situations. So that's what I sort of enjoy about it most. I'm not saying I don't like four-day cricket. I flip and love four-day cricket, and it's the purest form of the game, and it's also got a really, really close place to my heart. But just in terms of the different skills that are needed in a 50 over game, like that's what I really enjoy most, because there's the pressure of having to score all the time, but at the same time you can't sort of go balls to the wall in the first 20 overs and be knocked over.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, that was the answer I was hoping you would give, because then I'm going to follow up with, okay, so we've got Champions Trophy coming up now, top 8 teams in the world, basically a World Cup.
Yeah,
it's a World Cup except for format, whatever. And then we have the ODI one every 4 years. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that? But T20 is so huge already. And as we see, as the S20 grows, we see the Big Bash has been a big deal in Australia. The IPL is the IPL. That's basically a World Cup of cricket in its own sense. Do you reckon that in order for the ODI game to really live, breathe, and be its own place, I thought about this, do you think that maybe we should just cut T20 World Cups completely?
And you talk about leading. And you talk about leading,
bro. But Dom just prefaced this perfectly by telling you that it's kind of like the best format when you think of the aspects around it. And I think it's great for cricket as a sport. But now, because there's so much T20, it's like it just gets shaded. And all plants in shade never grow to the fullest potential.
Pause.
Do you think it's a fair thought? I mean, I'm not looking to rock your boat here.
It's a really good thought. What I would say is that it's clear that T20 cricket's taking over the world. I mean, the calendar, there's a cricket league pretty much every month of the year. So if you wanted to be, let's say, a T20 mercenary, you could literally play every single month of the year and make money out of that. And unfortunately, that's the nature of how the game has sort of progressed over the last 5 to 10 years.
By being a freelance professional, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. What I will say is, going back to your point, or your question rather, T20 World Cup happens every 2 years. So in an ideal world, what I would say is that maybe every four, maybe every even 3 years, because there's so much T20 cricket on at the moment, and you could maybe find a bit of space for 50 over cricket to still have its spot in the game or its spot to play in the game.
Can I ask, and I think, you know, we're probably alluding to the one question I wanted to ask with regards to, do you think there's too much cricket being played right now, and you're seeing it with the amount of injuries to star athletes, especially leading up to Lords? Do you think, like football, which me and Ben agree on, do you think there's too much cricket currently being played, because you've got SA20 and then players ultimately going into the IPL and then going into, you know, Champions Trophy and then going
into... Is this a question from ChatGPT?
No, it's not. It's literally what we've been discussing for 4 weeks.
So I will say there's a hell of a lot of international cricket and like league cricket on at the moment. So there's definitely sometimes too much of that. Well, I'd say more league cricket, if I could say that. Mm-hmm. International cricket, I mean, we've played a couple of test matches now in December. There were a couple of ODIs in October and September and a bit of November. And then there's no international cricket barring this Champions Trophy up until the World Test Championship again. And then after the World Test Championship, and even after the Champions Trophy, the next White Ball Series is only in September. So in terms of the schedule, there are like a lot of gaps, especially from South Africa's point of view, or South African cricketing point of view. In terms of domestic cricket, there's not enough cricket, in my opinion. Back in the day, we used to play 30 or 40 games.
That's the weird thing about this question, because if you go into your Wikipedia page, Flex, you want to just bring it up here. I think Wikipedia's of the impression you don't play enough, because it says here, Dom Hendricks, they talk about you in the past tense here, how you played for Gauteng. It's like they really think that you're Ashenatic. You don't play enough. But it's such a good question in that respect, because how do you bridge that gap? Because if there's not enough domestic cricket, then the guys aren't being conditioned enough for the next level.
Exactly, yeah.
And if there's too much international cricket, the guys at the top are getting jaded and they're getting sort of worked out. And then not worked out, I mean, just run out.
Yeah, burnt out.
And then burnt out is what I was going for the third time. Lucky.
Yeah, I see you. But I mean,
as fans, the burnout worries us, because then we go, don't really know too much about this team, probably won't watch this. Going to end up watching Man United, because even if they're losing, I know he's in the team.
Yeah, that's a freebie.
I think the big thing, and it's the most obvious thing to me, watching how our international players train. So we're lucky, we've got quite a lot of international players around our environment. And the biggest thing for them is their workload. So as soon as they've come off a big stint for like 2 months, like the IPL, they're literally taking like 2 or 3 weeks off. And well, depending on when the next series is, but it's basically when the next series is, and then it's a build up to then. So big thing is how well they're training, how well they sort of making sure that they're recovering and making sure that they're keeping their workloads up, more than anything from a bowling point of view. From a batter's perspective, it's not as strenuous as the bowling can be. You obviously don't need as much workload, but you do need a high volume of hitting balls to sort of feel in a good place and knowing that you are ready to play.
Tom, I wanted to ask, because you alluded to the question of, you know, the cricket mercenaries type of scenario that's happening now with the short form of cricket. What is your opinion on that? Is that a good thing or bad thing for the growth of cricket? Because you've got a lot of young players now saying, I'd rather just go focus myself on T20 and go make a lot of money overseas with these Super Leagues going out, whether it's Big Bash, whether it's SA20 and, you know, the IPL. Is that a good or bad thing? What, like, just your opinion as a pro?
I see good and bad to it. I do understand that sport is a limited, well, your playing career is very limited. So in an ideal world, you want to make as much money as you can, because it is putting food on the table and it's your career at the end of the day. I'd have to go back and then ask the player in particular, what is your aspiration? Do you want to play for your country? Because if you're not willing to play for your country, then I do understand going down that route. But for me, at the end of the day, the biggest honor for me would be to play for my country, and that's what I would think most people would be thinking. There are the outliers every now and then where they don't give a crap about that, and they just want to make as much money as they can in the short space of time that the career is. So, it would be challenging in the game. It just depends on where a lot of people's heads are in terms of that. And from a cricketing, in our domestic setup, I'd say a lot of people are still in the frame that they want to play for their country and they want to represent the country. And then there comes a time where you, in your early 30s or your mid 30s, and you're like, okay, now I've got to make a choice here. How long do I still have in terms of that aspect? And then how long do I still have left in the tank to play, and how much money can I still make in that period? So I see a lot of our players sort of falling into that bracket where they play till their 30s, and then if they're not in and around the national side, they make that decision, okay, I'm calling it quits, or I've retired from international cricket, and they sort of go down that route.
So being over the age of 35, like most people, you always reference back to a time that you knew more about at a younger time. I mean, back when Marv was still playing, a very different game to where we are right now.
Strays.
But do you also think that there's a potential worry that, like, generational talents have very much different development nowadays? If you're very, very good, you get fast tracked into the flash bang big money stuff. So you're good. I'm just going to use a guy like Quentin Mopaka as a reference point. Young, can bowl bloody fast, is good, no doubt about it. But talent's one thing. Talent in your world gets you in through the door.
Correct.
How you develop and how you nurture and how you develop all the other sort of soft skills is what actually makes you a proper star that can have a career that goes into their 30s. But do you feel like, because of such a demand for entertainment and excitement, that some of these guys aren't actually going to get the development that they need to become the next superstars, like a Kukisa Rabada, AB de Villiers in the day, Alan Donald after that? I mean, do you think that the current structure with the demand for entertainment might actually almost stump these people, to use a cricketing term?
She's been. You on it today.
I will say there will be a couple of players that will sort of just be there or thereabouts and then not really get that opportunity to develop. I've seen plenty of talented players over my career so far falling into that same category where they've been good enough and then someone else sort of head pops up and next thing you know, they're the next best thing. And These people just fall by the wayside. So yeah, it is challenging in that aspect, but it's great for these young players like your Luandre Pretoriuses and your Quena Mapakas. I wish I could have done that at my age when I was 19 or 18, have an opportunity to play with freaking Joe Root and learn from him and watch him do it, and then tell Joe Root, don't worry, I've got you over here, and win the game single-handedly. So yeah, it's great in terms of that, but again, I do think there will be more than a handful of players that will just sort of be there under 19 level, and then you never hear from them again until maybe they're fortunate enough that they make it through the system, and at 25 or in their mid to late 20s, oh, jeepers, this guy's still around. He's still a good player. Okay, let's give him an opportunity now.
So I'm not just saying this because you're here, but I just think the answer is the more four-day cricket or longer form you can play, just to kind of give yourself a bit of for example, a certain batsman tore me to pieces in the SA20. You know, there's a certain way that he played the push like I've never seen before. Then you play it out a bit in the four-day cricket. Let your talents go a little bit. Get into like a rhythm of doing things. Same with batting. It's like, okay, I've just got to cheat you 2-3 times. But in the longer format of the game, there's less pressure on you to worry about that particular ball and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that can be an issue that young players can get into, and then it's the balance of playing with the stars when you're so young.
So
that would be
what I would say is also... there's not as much cricket at the lower level. So Division 1 and Division 2, there's cricket being played, and in my opinion, still not enough cricket. But when I started out, we were playing second team cricket. So I was playing for the Gauteng Strikers at the time, which fed up to the Lions, which was basically Northwest and Gauteng cricket pulled together. And at that level, I was playing 20, 30 games a season. On top of, if I was lucky enough to play for the Lions, I'd play an extra couple of games over there. So when I wasn't playing there, I was literally at the lower level, sort of learning my trade over there and figuring it out. So if I got nicked off 3 times in a weekend by one particular bowler, give me an opportunity to go and practice and say, okay, I'm struggling against this type of guy. I've been getting out a similar sort of pattern. I've got a game next week again. Here's a great opportunity to go and work on that. And by the time I got my opportunity or would get my opportunity at the high level or for the Lions or be at the national side, I would have some sort of idea to say, okay, this pattern has been picked up before. How did I solve that problem before? And then I'd be wiser to it going through it the second time around. Whereas at the moment, the kids that are coming through, you play academy cricket, you maybe play 4 games, 5 games a year. Jeez. And if not, you're playing club cricket. And when I was playing club cricket, when I was in my early in my teens and my early 20s, I mean, you'd get Neil McKenzie playing, Zander De Bruyne playing, Ethan O'Reilly, all these players playing for the Lions. They'd be playing every off weekend they have, and now you hardly see any professional cricketers really playing because you're getting pulled every which way, and it's literally just the standard of club cricket I've seen over the years has dropped drastically.
I just wanted to ask, in terms of the UK circuit versus the domestic circuit, are there major differences in what you've experienced
in club cricket? There is. Well, obviously, there's the paying element of it. Mm-hmm. You're making money overseas. Mm-hmm. But you get put under pressure as a professional, or if you're playing overseas, you get put under pressure immediately. So you actually get... When I did my first one, I got that impression within like the first month I was there, where people like, you're here to score runs, you're here to take wickets. And then all of a sudden, things are not going too great. And then the chairman would come and bump you on the shoulder and say, yeah, I see things are not going great.
It's almost like you're on a scholarship.
Yeah.
Like, then
you need to do well.
Then all of a sudden, he's like, listen, we're actually paying you money to perform here, so we'd like it if you'd score some runs. I know things have been tough, but you got to find a way. And I was like, okay, jeepers. Maybe I'm not here for a holiday. I need to actually get going here. And yeah, it's happened on a couple of occasions where I didn't have like a particularly good start to the season, and then immediately like, okay, reality kicks in here,
gotta switch it on.
Yeah, gotta switch it on and gotta find a way to be successful again. So yeah, the pressures in terms of that are quite high. I mean, a prime example is last season. I was in the UK now in 2024, and if I didn't score runs every week, I knew we'd be struggling. Like, it was that difficult. Because my club had gone through a couple of promotions in a couple of seasons. They sort of moved a little bit too quickly, and the players didn't grow quick enough. So
they looked at you.
A couple of occasions where I was like, cheapest.
You're a bit of a scapegoat too.
Yeah. I was like, wow, I'm under pressure week in, week out. And yeah, over time you figured out what your role is going to be. Yeah. As quickly as possible.
So between the two cultures in cricket, I mean, cricket's known for having a bit of a drinking culture. Do the guys in the English kind of realms go a bit heavier than the SA guys?
Oh, it would be a great competition. I would love to see that, because the guys do enjoy a pint over there. I mean, after every game, if you like a prime example, if you win Cheapers, there's no going on before midnight.
Old school fine session.
Not really fines in terms of that. Like the fines sort of set up in the UK is a little bit different, where in terms of club cricket, after every game, there's a kitty and you chip into the kitty depending on, so it's like 50p to £1 depending on what your transgressions were over the weekend, or building up from the last week. And then at the end of the season, all the money gets spent on a massive day. So I mean, like, you go watch horse racing, or you go to a lawn bowls, you play some lawn bowls, and then you end up, go to like a pub, and then all hell breaks loose, or you go and watch like a T20 finals day and you just have like a mac a jaw in terms of that. But it would be very interesting to see if a cricket team in South Africa and a UK cricket team go head to head in terms of that, because there are a fair few boys that I've come across in my time on both sides where you're just like, Cheapers guy, like, you need to slow down here.
Well, and there's no slowing down. Seeing as there's so many Cricket World Cups in various formats, let's add one more here. The absolute Cricket Boat Race World Cup. Yeah. So I have to ask you, because of the time where we are in the season, if I would ask you as a non-cricketing person, like Tion over there,
strays.
Yeah, Tion, you see, you're sitting here strays. On your phone, you and Marv texting strays. Each other. What is so special about the SA20? Like, as a completely neutral sort of answer, what makes this tournament special?
You're asking me from a neutral standpoint, but I'm currently working for the SA20.
Okay, so no, answer it like you're talking to a neutral person, okay. Like Tion.
No, that's fair enough. Well, I'll put it to you in this way. It's the first time I've been... So I went in season one for the during the first SA20, just to see what it was all about. It's the first time that I've watched a domestic game of cricket. It's the first time I've seen the wondrous fool that it's not been an international game since I was in my early 20s when the IPL came to South Africa or the Champions Trophy came to South Africa. So just the buzz and the atmosphere around that, where there's just so much happening. Let me put it to you from an SA20 perspective... It's not just the cricket is the center stage and this, I would say, the star of the show. It's like your performance act, your headline act. But there's so many other things going around the game and around the ground at the time that makes you want to come back for more. I've spoken to so many people, like, just in passing, like family and friends, and they're like, Cheapers, that was unbelievable. Like, I've never been before. I haven't watched cricket in 10 years, watch a live game. And all of a sudden they're like, I really want to go back. And the question is, why do you want to go back? No, just because it was such a draw, that it was great atmosphere. I mean, there was just this energy about it where everybody's just talking about it. And I think that's like sort of one of the biggest things about the SA20 at the moment. And not only that, going back to like sort of the players, I mean, seeing young superstars being developed in this tournament. I mean, Quinn Mapaka, now Luandre Pretorius is leading the runs at the moment. Yeah. I mean,
there was a guy yesterday I saw you bowl for the first time for the
Gideon Peters. Yes. Yeah,
came in major gas. He was hurrying everybody up.
What's this guy's name? Even another guy from the Royals, Ruben Herrmann.
Yeah,
I mean, he's had a great season so far. So there are a lot of these young players that are just getting this opportunity on, if you could say, an international stage, but in a domestic sort of space to learn and grow and make a name for themselves. And I think that's one of also the big things about the SA20 is that we're unearthing new talent. I mean, every season there's someone coming through and you're like, he's the talk of the town now. Okay, can he do it again? Okay, if you can't do it again, then there's someone else's name on everybody's lips. So, it's been fantastic in terms of that so far and my experience of it too.
Final question from me on this whole thing, right? Is there a conversation to be had about what the perfect cricket season could be? That role players, developments, and best versus best can come into the mix? Because I know, obviously, the last month, IC3 were saying, like, we need more strength versus strength, which is a lovely idea until you realize a lot of people kind of just get maybe sidelined a little bit. Do you think that it's a worthy discussion, or we must actually just be happy with what we've got here and stop fixating about how cricket has problems?
Well, there's problems in every sport, unfortunately.
Every sport, correct.
So there's never going to be a perfect world, unfortunately.
Exactly.
What I would say is, it would be great if there was a bit more cricket. I mean, everybody's crying out for more cricket. Yeah. Jeez. Like, in terms of domestic cricket, 100% we want more.
Just to that point, if there was a better schedule, then maybe the domestic cricket would have more structures to go, okay, cool, guys, we're going to have good players playing here, we're going to have a nice window, and then domestic game can rise. I think that's where we're going with it.
Yeah, international cricket, well, in terms of the Proteas, let me talk about the Proteas. Pretty much international cricket stops for them until up until the SA20, then that's it. And then if there's a ICC event, basically there'll be no international cricket, maybe barring one tour in June and July, or maybe...
Well, we're not hosting a single game this year.
Yeah, we're not. Not so, yeah, it is concerning. I mean, you want to see our players playing against people in our country. I mean, that's what we want to see at the end of the day. Much like the SA20, you want to go and watch these international players and our domestic players. It's the same thing for the Proteas. So as a Proteas fan, you'd be thinking, okay, why is the schedule so bad that we don't have any cricket or inbound tours this year?
And
there's numerous reasons for that, many of which I can't really talk about on air.
But yeah, we've got a World Cup coming.
But yes, there's another World Cup coming. So yeah. Like really frustrating in terms of that. But yeah, there are always like 2 or 3 weeks where I think you could easily fit in like a white ball series year, or maybe even a 2-test series over year in the winters. But I won't be surprised if you do see last minute a tour get pulled in, because it's happened in the past where there wasn't a tour scheduled and then all of a sudden
they pull it
there's
in.
There's a two-test series against, I don't know, Afghanistan or Bangladesh or something like that. So
just on that, can we play winter cricket on the Highveld? People always say it doesn't rain, so we can play. But are the pitches going to be...
So the trouble is because there's so much cricket, I'm not only talking about international and domestic cricket. You've got now women's cricket too. The facilities need their time to rest. Yeah. And unfortunately, if you start in the winter, you'd have to start very early. A 9 o'clock start for international fixture is brutal. Very, very difficult.
Don't because the slips in that day
the sun's also setting like very early. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have shadows on the field at like 4:30 in the afternoon. Yeah. So it does become tricky. You could say you could turn the lights on and play white ball cricket, but try fielding when it's single digit temperatures. It becomes very, very tricky.
Yeah. Okay, there's a final question which Sandile is too shy to ask, but I'll ask for us.
Don't ask anything stupid.
Is it possible to try and help us get Alan Donald as a guest in the studio?
I can arrange that.
It'll be his absolute dream.
New year of healing in cricket. I told you guys we were going to get Alan Donald here.
Yeah, I'll give him a shout, and I'm sure we could arrange something. When he is back in town. I'm not sure when that is yet.
Awesome. I appreciate you.
I don't think I'll ever see this man happier if you could somehow...
And I mean, with Heineken in front of him, I think he'd be well pleased to... join you guys on that.
Adam was my childhood hero as well, because of where I grew up. Dom, I love the fact that this year, the last couple of months, has got me back into the sport that I love so much, because cricket is fantastic on so many different levels. And I think in the social media age, people generally like to bitch about a lot of things. There is still so much that's great about the game. And SA20 also shines a light on that. You know, I think you summed it up perfectly there. It's the catalyst to bring people back to cricket.
Yeah.
And now from there, hopefully we can just keep riding this wave, and hopefully the SA20 keeps going and going. Best of luck with... Well, I mean, you're here for the rest of the show with us. I'm not going to say goodbye, but best of luck with the 4-day tournament from here. I mean, you guys to go back-to-back is a really big deal. How many games would you then have left?
Those games would be the end of March, and we've got 3 more fixtures. So I think we've got 1 home fixture, 2 away fixtures. And then if we are still in the top 2, we play a 5-day final. And if we're placed in first, we'd have a home final.
Amazing. 5-day final.
So we had a 5-day final last year against Western Province, and we went to the last day on the fifth day.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
That's cool. And we were actually in a world of trouble, because on the first day it was cloudy and overcast, lights on, seeming around everywhere, and we were like 50-5, I think, after the first session, and we managed to turn the game around completely and actually win it. So it was a great advert for Red Bull cricket and domestic 4-day cricket.
Yeah.
Two really top sides playing against each other.
Oh, so that'd be so great, because they will make a plan. We'll get people in, go 100%. Watch it. That'd be pretty exciting. All right, we do need to get into the weekend of sport that's coming up. There is, again, huge amounts of SA20. It's a wonderful football weekend.
But
locally and internationally, it's a massive weekend of football.
Huge.
Not so big on the rugby locally, but obviously Six Nations is there. So weekend preview coming up after the break.
The PSL this weekend is going to be super, super exciting. It's a historical weekend, Ben. Pirates versus Chiefs. I'm going with my dad, Styles P. We're going to go watch Chiefs and Pirates. So it's going to be an interesting week for me next week.
Is this a father-son outing that's happened before in your mixed jerseys?
Yeah, so
Dom, he's the Chiefs fan. Yeah. Dad's the Pirates fan.
And he hates it for me. He doesn't understand what he did wrong as a parent. So 3:30, guys, it is one of the biggest fixtures in African football and football in general. So 3:30, Chiefs versus Pirates. So guys, tune in, and then for the rest of the, you know.
Well, hang on a second. We haven't actually, the PSL has been hard to cover of late. We haven't actually had to have a good look. Flex, could you bring up the log just so we know exactly where we are? So look, no matter where these teams are at any given stage, this derby's a big deal.
Huge.
But they're both in the top five, which is hugely exciting for you.
First time. I'm even shocked. You know, I usually, it's bad luck to look at the Chiefs log, but it's nice to see us, you know, fifth. But there's so much football that still needs to be played. What's going to be interesting about this weekend's fixture is Pirates have played significantly more games. They've played, I think, 10 more games than Chiefs has played because of the CAF traveling.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting in terms of dynamic of what do they have in the tank. You know, Pirates got a bye weekend because of the Royal AM situation. But it's going to be super exciting. The derby is always huge. It's going to be a packed FNB stadium. So, yeah, always, always love to watch, you know, that rivalry. And it's going to be even more special watching with my dad.
But in the sort of context of where we are right now, Pirates have been this big, fancy team. They're doing so well on the continent. Chiefs have got this time to be resurgent. I mean, there's always an underlying story to the derby.
I love the fact that you use words like resurgent. No, but they're putting too much.
They really are, even though they've played three more games than on the log right here.
Yeah.
But it is. It's a chance. Like, these guys can't be cuck forever. We've spoken about that as well. And I'm excited. I'm excited for this game.
Yeah, 100%. And it'll be a nice benchmark to see where Chiefs and Pirates are at. I think, you know, a lot of the young players for Pirates, probably their first real derby and a sold out stadium at that level. So it's going to be super interesting. And the Chiefs' new coach, first derby as well. So it's going to be an exciting weekend of football on that level. And once again, big showcase for the, you know, for the PSL.
And just as a catch up, there's still no VAR in the Premier League, huh?
There's no VAR. And it's one of those weekends where we're going to need it. I can just feel it. And just going into the rest of the fixtures, you know, we've got Stellenbosch versus Sekhukhune.
Yeah.
We've got Polokwane versus Chipa. And then on Sunday, we've got TS Galaxy versus Cape Town City. And then Sundowns versus Arrows. Sundowns got to keep on going because Pirates, this might be the season where Sundowns have got to win all those games where they're meant to win. So it's going to be interesting. If Pirates, which they won't, if they beat Chiefs, it's a big statement for their push for, you know, for winning the league this year. So that's
be awesome. No, for sure. Dom, do you have a local team that you support in the PSL?
I supported Pirates when I was younger, but I haven't watched a PSL game in, geez, many, many moons.
It's difficult because the momentum's not quite there. And in all fairness, this is no disrespect to the PSL, but it's not one of the world's biggest leagues. We've only got so many, like, hours of the day to watch sports, and naturally a lot of it gravitates towards the Premier League. Cue the next section.
So shout out,
Flex, let's have a look at that log.
Let's have a look at the log.
Look at that. Man United still not in the top eight. Sorry, you mean, look, it's a tough school, this one. You got to be top eight to be on our log. Liverpool, well done. They're doing so fantastically well, and that 6-point gap is basically a 9-point gap because of their game in hand. I mean, Arsenal fans had this false hope by going, couple of wins here, but it's basically a 9-point gap. Forest has now drifted a little bit after that drubbing they got last week. And there it is, Man City timing their run into the top four. Chelsea's dropped down after that loss last week. Newcastle will not go away.
Yep.
Bournemouth, with only 5 losses this whole season, they're looking pretty strong. And Aston Villa, only one with a negative goal difference in the top eight, but, you know, decent enough team. The fixtures for this weekend, though.
You're not going to do the honourable thing and show the second part of the lock? and show them that we're at least 12th now?
12th.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Sweet.
Top 12, that's
haters,
where it's all at.
Haters going
to
hate.
I mean, this is the guy who needs the MTN 10 just to get Chiefs involved. Now he wants a top 12 at mention.
Man, you're on me.
So this weekend's pretty good because we've got Nottingham Forest. You need to bounce back. You know, people are saying it's a bit of a fluke that they've been up there. They're going to fall away eventually at some stage. They've shown a lot of metal in big games. And they've got Brighton, which is also a tough one.
Yeah.
Now, Brighton have had quite a lot of draws this season.
Yeah.
I think also they've only had like 5 losses.
Well, they only draw when they're not playing, you know. Jeez, when they play us, they give us a hiding.
We worked that out last week. So that'll be your first game to look out for on Saturday at 2:30. Newcastle then versus Fulham at 5. I wouldn't worry too much about that. I mean, Fulham lost to Man United. Newcastle can have no issues there. The big one. Bournemouth versus Liverpool. Before we get into that, Dom, I mean, When Man United lose, are you like, eh, or does it actually like hurt you? Like, how big of a fan?
This is a terrible analysis. You don't have to answer the question,
Dom. No, I just want to see how deep it cuts with him, because we're about to get into Man United's fixture. No, I want to just test the waters.
It's depressing at the moment. When we lose it, it hurts.
It still hurts.
Yeah, it does.
Which is great, because it means you still hope.
Yeah, 100%.
Or as my girlfriend would say, you're still mad loyal. So, but you know, talk about that Liverpool-Bournemouth game. Bournemouth coming off beating a five, you know, a Nottingham Forest, which is legit. I want to see which Bournemouth is going to show up against Liverpool, because the Mo Salah show is in full effect. If I am Liverpool, I just go give the guy his money, because he's clearly going to be the
They're still not.
They're still saying, we'll figure it out. This guy going to be out, and it's going to be a sad, sad situation going into next season. Yeah, so Liverpool, usually say this, give them the money, bro.
Every time, every minute Liverpool sit on this, I can just hear the money stacking up in Saudi.
Yeah, just, or, you know, randomly going to Real Madrid and going to go cash in on that. So, yeah, so if I'm a Liverpool fan, as great as Mo Salah has been, I'll just force, you know, the re-signing of him right now.
Yeah, okay, well, Sunday in the Premier League, this is where it gets very tasty, right? Man United versus Crystal Palace, this is a great game. Two equally matched teams, similar kind of lifespans.
Wow, similar lifespans? That's crazy. Look.
How excited are you about this game?
We got to win.
I know that, but I mean, excitement levels.
I no longer get excited about Man United. I just hope for the best, but it's a super exciting game. And there are a lot of players used to play for Man United who could possibly just end up cutting our throats, like Danny Welbeck did last week.
How old was Danny Welbeck when he started at Man United?
Jeez, he was playing there super early. I think he is Cristiano first run. So that's how long ago Danny Welbeck
is. I feel like Danny Welbeck is like the shade of Freddy of like cricket. You never really knew his age, but he was still playing.
Yeah. So yeah, that's going to be super exciting for both teams. And unfortunately, Man United's playing at home. That's what I wanted to double check.
The old fortress of Old Trafford. So Brentford will take on Spurs. Spurs are, I know there's injury crisis, but if you're looking at a team in bad fortunes right now, I mean, Man United fans watch Spurs games just to feel a bit better about themselves, which is saying something.
What's crazy is, you know, in a high-end fire type of league like the EPL, I'm surprised that Spurs have backed their coach to this end. Usually by this time, they would have gotten rid of somebody.
But you know why? Deep down, I think that Levy guy knows he's actually the problem.
Yeah, he's
being compassionate with this current guy. Because he knows the next guy is going to be more admin.
I hate to say it, but bring Jose back for Spurs. And, you know, at least they will fight, because they really need a strong coach. It kind of feels like they've dropped tools now against their coach. So that's the, you know, that's the terrible
I think
part.
Bringing Jose back to Premier League is like getting back together with an ex that ended badly.
Well, look, we're trying to get Paul Pogba back. So that's even crazier. So, yeah. Yeah,
that's a different kind of misery. The biggest game of all, of course, will be second placed Arsenal at home against Man City. This game is basically where the Premier League kicked off this year properly. Mm-hmm. Rodri went down, Man City's chances, everything went down. Mm. Arsenal got sent off because VAR and refs are all conspiring against this team this year. Proof, just facts, no feelings.
Yep.
And that game ended in a late winner for Man City against the 10 valiant men of Arsenal. This game, even footing at the Emirates, it's a good game for Arsenal to win.
Oh no, it really is. Jinx it.
There's no jinxing there.
Guys, as per usual, Ben has gone down and jinxed his club every time he's made this call. Ben, how are you feeling about this? Because as I said, once a resurgent Pep comes back, you're going to have some problems. Are you as confident as you've been? Because you guys haven't been as great as, you know, as you great you should be.
Look, you know, I'm not that invested actually, but...
You liar.
2-0 up against PSG, lose 4-2. Mm. So as much as they're resurgent and they can do things locally, hits a Chelsea team is going off the boil. I think Arsenal will win this thing. I just think they do. I think it's a time for it, and that's going to be it. Monday, if you are a Chelsea fan, you guys get to play in the unglamorous 10 o'clock game on Monday. Quickly to get into the SA20 for the weekend. So this is the final weekend. After this weekend's play, it is playoff time.
Yeah.
Now, if you are new to how this works, is that the playoffs are very weird in the SA20. But they're weird in a kind of good way, because the top two teams play each other straight away. The winner of that goes into the grand final. The loser of that then plays the winner of the third and fourth place teams. So you get two bites at the cherry kind of thing. And I'll be more succinct about that next week. But that's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
But this weekend, Pretoria Capitals, they are trying hard to be that final fourth team in the mix there in the playoffs. They'll be taking on MI Cape Town at home. That'll be at 5:30. Saturday, Sunrise Eastern Cape versus them Capitals. Is that right? They go back to back. Pretty sure that's right. And then Joburg Super Kings versus Durban Super Giants. That's also another big one. Sunday, MI Cape Town, Durban, Pretoria Capitals, 3:30.
Durban been dog shit.
Durban are already out. They've out a long time ago, which is a shame. They were a finalist last year. Yeah. And after that first game, I thought this team could go really far.
Yeah,
anyone with Henrik Claassen can go really far. Dom, has there been any sort of surprise for you as which team has underperformed? Because there's been quite a few bonus point wins in the last week or so, which would suggest a drubbing. But was that because some of the teams have just sort of fallen out a bit? Too many injuries?
A lot of injuries. There's been a whole host of injuries on the fast bowling front for a lot of teams, actually. Mm. So I think that's been one of the biggest things.
Well, Durban Super Giants just bowl spin now, don't they? It's like the whole team.
Well, did you hear about the game at the, in Paul? It was the first time in the SA20 that 20 overs of spin were bowled consecutively.
Oh, wow.
Royals bowled 20 overs of spin last week, Saturday.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Dry pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very surprised by Durban Super Giants. But, yeah, a couple of interesting calls from them, I'd say. Quinny de Kock batting at 4 for the start of the competition. Then all of a sudden, the last couple of games, opening the batting. Mm. I mean, surely you'd want one of your better players to get as much time in the middle as possible. So
well, one of your better players with a great track record of opening the batting.
Exactly, yeah.
just strange what's going on there.
And then, yeah, a couple of players just looked a bit of all sorts this season. I mean, Henrik Claassen struggling a little bit. Mm. So, yeah, it's a bit of mixed emotions. Pretoria Capitals, I mean, I think last night they made like 6 or 7 changes. So, yeah, they're having a bit of a resurgence. I mean, they beat JSK with a bonus point last night. It looked like they weren't at the races at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's still 5 teams in the running. Obviously, 1 and 2 have secured their place. But, yeah, 3, 4, and 5 are still in the mix. So, it's going to be a very interesting weekend for SA20.
Do you have a...
I'm just going to say, I'm going to miss it. I love, during the week, I've said this 2 weeks in a row now, I love the fact I could turn the TV on, there it
and
is.
Just, and just say to Eddie, any standout player that you have for the tournament so far?
Well, hard to look past Luandre Pretorius.
Yeah.
He's been phenomenal. I mean, just his aura about, it looks like he's just playing another game of cricket. Yeah. Like, it's not really fazed him at all. But I will say this, just watching him, how he played in the domestic SA, South African domestic T20 comp in September, he looked like he was destined for greatness. Yeah, I mean, opening game, I think they scored about 250 against the Lions, Titans Lions at the Wanderers. And yes, he whacked us to all parts too. So
it's kind of like if Graham Smith hung out with Brian Lara. That's what this guy reminds me of. He's got the presence, but he's got that weird kind of flair about him.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's SA20 for the weekend. Yeah. I mean, obviously big playoffs next week. That's pretty much it. Something that's really exciting about for us next week, of course, we're doing a massive MMA show. And we've got 2 guests. One's a current UFC fighter. Another Oak is a guy with increasingly more cauliflowered ears every time I see him. So this guest, this couch over here is going to be stacked with MMA gurus and Sandile Shangazi and me. But more importantly, next week you can actually watch the UFC if you live here in Johannesburg with us, or Greater Gauteng, make the trip. Together with Heineken Zero, we're going to be at Benchwarmers. Yeah. So we're looking morning, right? We're going to have breakfast beers. We're going to have a lot of fun.
Do you want me to ask you the question?
Go for it.
When does the main fight start?
So Drikus, the UFC do Drikus dirty, okay? They put him on these dog shit cards. Like, the rest of the fights aren't good. As a rule of thumb, look when the main feed starts, like the main card. Yeah. So if you're looking at America, it'll always be like a 5 a.m. start. Yeah. And then you'll have the 4 fights, whatever. So just add 2 hours to the start of the main card. That's a general rule of thumb. So whatever is the start of the main card, they're fighting in Sydney this time around. But if you can watch the UFC with us at Benchwarmers, tables limited, it'll be an absolute joy because we're going to be there from early.
Yeah.
There's going to be so much banter around this. Some of the fights in the lead-up aren't going to be that great. Drikus's pay-per-view points are the lowest of anybody because he tops the cards and they stack it with cuck. Yeah. But Drikus is going to be fighting. That's the most important thing. So next week on the show, episode 34, we are going so heavy into this. We're going to be previewing this fight, the greater context of where Drikus is in his career, the chances against Strickland, and all of this will then culminate with you watching with us at the Benchwarmers February 9th,
morning
Sunday
February
the morning. Yeah. That's pretty much it. We're going to wrap it up with our poll for this week. As we say, the Six Nations starting. Sandile actually just bypassed all of it because he loved the football so much. But this weekend, France are taking on Wales in the first game. Italy versus Scotland, And then we've got the big one, which will be Ireland versus England. So those are your first fixtures. We'll get more into that on the Gareth Cliff Show on Friday morning. But who do you reckon is going to win? It's an obvious three-horse race. Anybody who knows anything about rugby can tell you it's a three-horse race. Yeah. If Scotland win this, I will do a month of shows just in a kilt. They're not going to win.
Please, Scotland, give us something. I need a whole bit to you.
Trust me, if I'm in a kilt, I'll be giving you something. Go on to our TRN on the bounce, on the X, and vote in our poll, Ireland, France, or England. Yeah. Ireland have the fixture advantage in that the two biggest games against England and France are going to be at home. France, of course, is the team of all teams. And England, through voodoo, food poisoning, or just some pretty good play here and there without Owen Farrell getting a yellow card, they could also have a surprise package. I don't know. That's what Darby said last week, and he's our rugby expert. Dom, that wraps up for the week. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's great to get your sort of unemotional take of where cricket is right now, because we'll talk a bit of shit and we'll talk to guys who have even more salacious views on these things. But your sort of view on a couple of these things gave us some really great insights today. And just great having you in studio with us. I really want you to make that home final. I want to watch a domestic 5-day game. Amped for that. Sandile will wear that shirt.
I will wear it again.
He'll wash it every night.
I think you'll have to upgrade that shirt.
I will get my own version of that.
I'll
get my own version of that. It'll be a day.
Yeah, sweet.
It'll be a day. Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jens.
This is also Project Healing for me and cricket. And so this is the first step of many of me getting back into cricket. I got you.
And for you looking into the right camera. That'll be happening next week.
Damn it.
Catch you then.